Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall, and as usual, I'm excited and happy because it's Monday, and I get to do my show and talk to exciting people. Things are a little different this Monday. I know you were expecting me around 6 o'clock, but today was a little special day because I have a little meeting to go to later for radio hosts and things like that. So we just thought we'd have it a little earlier. Today, my guest is Elizabeth Kaler Pentecoff, and she's author of the book, The Missing Kennedy, Rosemary Kennedy and the Secret Bonds of Four Women. And I just want to welcome her to the show. We're going to talk all about this fascinating lady, Rosemary Kennedy, and how she fits in with the Kennedy family, with life, her story, her challenges, just all kinds of exciting stuff. So I want to welcome you to the show, Elizabeth. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm just fine.
Oh, great. Congratulations on the book. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
I had a chance to go through it. I didn't read it all the way yet because I get so many books a week. And
sure.
But I do read them. That's the good thing about it. You know, the funny thing or the interesting thing I thought about the cover, it just looks so dignified. And, I mean, it's something to really be proud of. Yet, at the same time, you know you're in for a wallop of a story. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And when I first began writing it, I thought at first it was a very dignified, loving story, which it is, but I was not in for the journey that I actually experienced. I never realized how emotional it would be for me to do the reading and the research I needed about Rosemary and to look at my own life, which held some surprises for me, too.
Yes. Now, really quick, before I get into the questions, Rosemary Kennedy, exactly who is she? Are you
right.
related to her?
It's a good idea to remind everybody because a lot of time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosemary was the sister to, of course, President John F. Kennedy, our 35th president. And she was one of nine people. So she was from a very large family at a similar time when my aunt was also one of a very large Catholic family. My aunt was one of 10, and my aunt became a nun, Sister Paulus Kaler, who ended up being Rosemary's very special friend and devoted caregiver.
I see. So that's that connection you have.
Right.
I see. Now, did you used to visit I was going to call her Rosie, like Rosemary.
We did call her Rosie. That was her nickname, and we loved her dearly. And, yes, we were all allowed to begin visiting her when Rosemary was 43 and I would have been aged 4. And this would have been in 1962, so quite a while ago.
Oh, wow. Were you aware of how important the family was?
Actually, I was. Even at a young age, I knew. And the only reason I can tell you that I knew this was because not long after, when I was 6 and, well, nearly 6 and in the first grade, the president, of course, was assassinated. And anybody my age or older than me can tell you exactly where they were the moment they heard President Kennedy was assassinated. And I can remember very clearly that I was in the first grade, and the moment I was told this by the teacher, I actually physically suffered symptoms. I mean, I just got a headache. I felt awful. I felt nauseous. And it was because I knew it was my friend Rosemary's brother. So I did understand that.
Wow, that's pretty deep. Now, what about your own life inspired you to write Rosie's story? Was there a connection other than the connection you just mentioned?
Well, I will tell you the truth. I've kind of thought off and on about it, but I always put it aside because quite frankly, it's a painful story, and I just wasn't ready to do the research. And the other thing is, while she was alive, you know, we were very protective of Rosie because she was of such a famous and rich family. If more people knew where exactly she was in Wisconsin, there could be a lot of danger. You know, a lot of crackpots, excuse me, are out there, and they could do damage to her. They could kidnap her. So we were very protective, and we never really said much to anybody. And then, you know, mainly I'm a writer, but I've written a lot of children's books and a lot of, you know, how-to things and just different kinds of materials. So one day in the summer, I kind of was thinking I was going to write a novel, and I asked the universe, and I said, well, what should I write now? And I'm a deep believer in the studying of our own nighttime dreams, because I feel that they lead to our subconscious, and we can learn a lot about ourselves through analyzing the symbols in our dream. I'm even in a dream group. I've been in a dream group for years. I've kept a dream journal for, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years at least. And so that night I went to bed and I said, all right, I need some help here. What project should I write that, you know, will be good for me to write and to do for the world? And all of a sudden I dreamt that night that a young blonde man came to me. And he looked familiar, but I didn't know him in an odd way. And I said, well, what am I supposed to write? And he said, you're going to write The Missing Kennedy. And I was aghast. I said, no, I cannot write this book. And he said, why not? And I said, well, I don't want to annoy any of the Kennedys, because I don't want to just, like, feed off the Kennedy name. That's not the purpose. I would never do that. And I said, I can't do that. I'm, you know, I'm not a gossip and gossipy person. I don't want to be a Kitty Kelly. He goes, no. He said, you know, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, the sister of the president who started Special Olympics, and Ted Kennedy, the lion of the Senate, who was in the Senate for many, many years. He said, you know, everybody is very happy that you are writing this. So I woke up and I thought about it, and I still wasn't sure. I didn't really know where to start and what to do. And then, so I started writing kind of in a timid fashion my own memories of Rosie, and I started reading more about her, because there was a lot in her life as a young person that I was not very familiar with, and I had to do my research. And as I was researching, in one of the articles, I saw a picture of this young blonde man. And the caption read that he was David Kennedy. This would be the son of Robert Kennedy. And this young man, when a boy, was alone in a Los Angeles hotel room watching his father, and he saw his father be assassinated.
Oh, my goodness.
And so poor David really was a very troubled boy. He suffered from mental illness, and so many people who suffer from mental illness seek help through non-traditional ways, and so David sought alcohol and, unfortunately, drugs. And in 1984, when he was just a young man in his 20s, he accidentally overdosed and died. So this sad tale was from someone from the other side. And then I was reading in one of the books I read, and it said that David Kennedy told his cousins he felt very connected to his Aunt Rosemary. And they asked him why, and he said, well, the family wanted to kind of sweep her under the rug. They were ashamed of Rosemary because she was so different, and she suffered from problems that were rather embarrassing. And he said, you know, I think if my grandfather Joe were alive now, he would want to lobotomize me. And that just sent tears to my eyes. And I knew that I really did need to write this story. And I followed my heart And I really wrote the kind of story my aunt, Sister Paulus, lived, because she was not a judgmental person, and she embraced everyone with gentleness, which was why she made such an impact on Rosie's life.
You mentioned lobotomize. Is that what happened to Rosemary?
Yes.
Because I noticed in some of the pictures when she's older, her body was sort of shaped differently.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I was wondering what happened with
right.
that.
Well, what happened is when she was very young, she had to do kindergarten for, you know, years. She couldn't get out of kindergarten. And the teacher said, you know, we really need her to be tested. We can't help her anymore because we can't hold her back in kindergarten forever. So Mrs. and Mr. Kennedy, Joe and Rose, took Rosie and had psychological testing done on her. And, you know, now this was the 1920s. So very little was known at the time about mental challenges, and they didn't really know about disabilities. And I saw examples of Rosie's work that were in the John F. Kennedy Library and Museum in Boston. And she actually was a very decent at math. She could read and write, and she could add and subtract three-digit numbers. But she had really a lot of trouble with spelling and writing and reading. And today, doctors would probably diagnose her with dyslexia or some other types of learning disabilities like that. Unfortunately, back then, they said that she was mentally retarded. We would say mentally challenged today, or intellectually challenged. And so she was branded in a way that at the time was very grim. Anyone who had anyone with a mental challenge, they hid them away in attics, or they were encouraged to place them in institutions, which Rose and Joe were told to do. And they did not believe that for Rosemary. They said, no, we're going to educate her at home. So Rose worked very hard tutoring her daughter. She hired special tutors. Rosemary had the finest special schools. And so Rosemary did get an education. Unfortunately, in her teen years, she began acting out irrationally, and she had violent temper tantrums. She hurt herself, and she hurt family members. And so at that time, they were really at a loss for what to do. Again, doctors said, put her away into the institution, and the most glaringly shocking thing is that they told them never to visit her. And that was common at the time, and it was even common later in the 1950s and 60s. And physicians thought it would be too emotional for the person who suffered with mental illness. And so they were at their wits' end at what to do about Rosemary. And at the time, there was a very big push in society to have lobotomies. That was kind of the only hope at the moment to solve this horrid problem, because people were placed into institutions, and they were like dungeons, worse than prisons. They were ancient fire traps. There was no money for any training for people or anything, and so they would hire basically alcoholics, drug addicts, and criminals. And so it was a very sad situation, and there was a physician called, his name was Dr. Walter Freeman, and he was a neurologist, and he practiced on brains in the morgue along with his partner, Dr. James Watts. And then when he got better at it, he took people from bars and institutions, prisons, and he operated on them. And he was very much into his own publicity. He altered his statistics. And so he went to the press, and people believed him. Doctors, you know, believed him. People were thrilled that now all of a sudden there were headlines in the newspaper that said the lobotomy was no worse than removing a tooth.
Oh, my goodness. And what is it? Did they remove part of the brain? How does that work?
They did. And what they didn't remove the brain. What they did is they drilled in the prefrontal lobes, which would be either side of the front part of the brain, on either side of Rosemary's skull. They drilled in, and then they would only have given her a little mild sedative so that she was able to count and sing. And then they would insert a very sharp instrument, very sharp-pointed instrument, and then they would twist it into the prefrontal matter of her brain until she could no longer sing or answer questions. And then they were finished. And unfortunately, of course, Rosemary was a tragedy, and she no longer could communicate. She had to relearn how to walk, how to talk, how to use eating utensils, how to dress herself. It was a very sad situation. She was only 23 when this horrible disaster happened to her, and then she went into an institution in upstate New York.
In those days, did they look at mental illness like as if you were a demon or something?
Absolutely. They thought that the devil did it, or they blamed the parents, and they said that it was bad parenting. You know, they thought all sorts of things. They thought it was contagious. So it was to be hidden and never spoken of. And Mr. Kennedy, Joe, did not tell Rose, his wife, nor his family, the truth. And he told them what the doctors had said, that she had worsened and needed to be placed in an institution and should never be visited.
Ay, ay, ay.
So from 1941 until 1961, Rosie had no one visit her in the institution. It wasn't until Joe himself, ironically, had a stroke in December of 61 that suddenly the nuns at St. Coletta, where Rosemary now was, couldn't contact Mr. Kennedy, so they contacted Rose. And Rose then found out the truth about what happened to her daughter and where she was. And then immediately she visited her daughter and told the sisters, you know, the sisters had been told by Joe to keep her out of sight, keep her hidden. And Rose said, no, let her out in society, take her to restaurants and church and, you know, socialize her. And suddenly Rosie, who still had experienced violent temper tantrums because of all that seclusion and anger, suddenly she began to be socialized through my aunt's constant dedication. She was toilet trained, and she suddenly began having a real life.
Wow. That is amazing. You know, because I was thinking every time, I love old movies, and whenever they showed a play, like an asylum or something, it's always like a big, dark Dracula castle type.
Exactly.
And, you know, cages and, you know, and I just couldn't imagine anyone having to stay in a place like that.
Right. Well, fortunately for Rosie, she was wealthy. So Joseph put her in a place called Craig House in New York. And people might have a glimmer of recognition because Zelda Fitzgerald, Scott Fitzgerald's wife, the author, she stayed there in 1934 for a brief time. And then in the 50s, Jane Fonda's mother stayed there and unfortunately committed suicide there. But when Rosie was there from 1941 to 1949, she had her own little cottage. But unfortunately, you know, again, they didn't have good people to work at these places as aides because they didn't pay them very much, and they had no background checks that we do today. And unfortunately, there was evidence of sexual abuse. So that's when Joseph found out about St. Coletta. The Sisters of St. Francis of Assisi ran it in southeastern Wisconsin, and that's when he went there on the advice of his friend Cardinal Cushing. He saw the how loving and beautiful it was, and so he had a ranch-style house built for Rosie right there, and that is where Rosie lived the remainder of her life.
Oh, birthday. When you were writing this book, did you have a view of the Kennedy family before you started, and then a view after the change? Yeah,
I
how
did.
Was that?
Well, as I grew up, I had a hard time accepting what Joe did and also Mrs. Kennedy's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother tried to temper it because my mother, well, she was an adult and she knew what it meant to be a parent, and she also saw, you know, she lived at that time. My mother was born in 1920, so she remembers, you know, what it was like at the time, and I had no idea what how mental health or anything was. And so she said, you know, Mrs. Kennedy was a product of her Victorian upbringing, and you know, Mr. Kennedy obviously had reasons, but even then we didn't know the background of this charlatan who was one of her surgeons. And so I had a lot of anger toward Anne Rose, and I had a lot of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the deeper I researched this, the more empathy I had for everybody involved in this story, for Rose, for Joe, for Rosemary, for her siblings. You know, what a horrible situation they were faced with. And at the same time in the 60s as I was growing up, my own family was dealing with mental illness, but I wasn't even really aware that it was mental illness. I didn't know. And it was my mother's aunt who suddenly began acting in very strange ways, lashing out at the family. She would lie and steal money, and we couldn't understand what happened to this normally sweet aunt I had. And I asked my mother, and my mother would point to her head and said, I think she's sick up there, but we didn't know anything else. And so we kept it a secret. I was never allowed to mention her name. And it was a very frightening situation that, of course, at the time, no one knew, no one talked about it, no one accepted it. And then, you know, later on, as an adult, I found out that she had been diagnosed later in life as a schizophrenic. And suddenly things started making sense because I started reading about mental illness. And I realized that some of the situations, the way Rosemary was acting, was very similar to what my aunt was going through.
I
didn't really put this together until I started doing the book. I had so buried my Aunt Zora, I had not even thought that we had this in common.
I don't want to get weird on you, but did you feel like Rosemary was kind of guiding you or looking over you?
Absolutely. Yes, I felt like she was with me. I would have dreams where she would kind of pop in and smile and then leave, you know. And so I just felt that she was with me. And more than even Rosie was Sister Paulus. I just felt her kind of guiding me in this journey. I just felt her love around me as I did this. And, you know, while I researched and wrote, I remember I'd be typing away, writing away in my office, and my husband would walk by, and I remember one time he said, "Oh, what's wrong? You know, what is the matter? Are you all right?" And I looked up and I said, "Well, yes, why?" And I didn't even realize that there were tears down my cheeks, and I was just sobbing. And it was because it was very painful, and I was reliving these memories, and I was learning all about Rosie.
Amazing. Now, is this the only book account about Rosemary that exists?
This is the only personal account. I'm the only person to have known her intimately and provided my own photos of our relationship with Rosemary after she was, lobotomized.
How do you think out of curiosity, the Kennedys and the Shrivers will receive your book?
I don't know about the other Kennedys, but I do know about the Shrivers because I interviewed them, and they were very gracious with their comments, not only their interviews, but their words about the book. And I know that when I interviewed Anthony, the first person I interviewed, And Anthony is best known because he's one of Eunice Kennedy Shriver's sons. So he, you know, he grew up knowing and being very active with Special Olympics himself. But when he was in high school, he would come out to visit Rosemary and stay at her house with Sister Paulus. And my parents met him on occasion and had lunch with him. And he was just the most mature high school student. And he really formed a very strong bond with his aunt. So that when he was in high school, he was moved to start an organization called Best Buddies. And what Best Buddies does, it started with high school students, and now it includes college all over the world, where Best Buddies match able-bodied people with disabled and intellectually challenged students so that they can form bonds and friendship. And it really, you know, has improved anti-bullying, you know, products of empathy. And I think it's really leading forward with kindness, which I feel that our culture, especially today, there's just this, there's you and me and them, and there's just so much dislike and hatred for anyone that isn't exactly like ourselves. And I feel this needs to be embraced with empathy and love. And I think that's what not only Anthony did with Best Buddies, but Eunice did with Special Olympics, and my aunt did on a very smaller level with Rosemary.
Fantastic. You know, in your, oh my goodness, we've got 3 minutes. I'm so engrossed in what you, I love your voice. This is great. You talk a lot about in your book about feeling like an outcast from your extended family.
Yes.
But being a part. How did that play in your writing? And especially Rosemary, I'm sure she felt that way too.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
I think we're very similar. I think that I was an outcast because I had to keep my rather liberal Catholic beliefs to myself. I couldn't say them. It was scary to think them. And I had to kind of closet myself. And poor Rosie was very much closeted because she couldn't be who she really was. And she was hidden away. So I feel that, you know, there was a lot in common. And I think if you can take anything from this book, you really need to know that we really need a Rosemary Revolution. And that is, if you are experiencing mental health symptoms, reach out to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, NAMI. You know, talk to a trusted friend or a therapist. And by all means, help everyone feel like there is an option. And there should be loving kindness for everyone, no matter if we have mental illness, we have if we have a disease, or if we look differently or talk differently. Let's embrace everyone.
Oh, I love it. I just love to hear you talk about these things. It's so sincere. You can tell it's coming from your heart.
Well, thank you.
You know what I mean? It's great. Do you have a website or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go to missingkennedy.com. Also, lizbooks.com. That's more about me.
Great. And give that again, just in case.
Sure. Missing Kennedy, missingkennedy.com, or Lizbooks, Lizbooks, .com. And just know that the book is available through all the regular outlets. And again, remember empathy and kindness. If you can do that, a little bit of empathy and kindness every day, I think it'll make the world a better place.
Oh, fabulous. What a great way to end this show. I just want to thank you for joining me. I'm mad because it went by so fast.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I enjoyed talking with you very much.
Oh, it was terrific. So, yes, what you've been listening to is All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And my guest today was Elizabeth Kaler Pentecoff, and she's author of this fabulous book called The Missing Kennedy, Rosemary Kennedy and the Secret Bonds of Four Women. Fabulous book.
Great. And the site is on Facebook, so go find us there, too.
Great. Again, thank you for joining
thank
me.
You.
I really appreciate it. So I look forward to being with you all next week. My new book is finally released, so it's called Today You Forgive Me, What About Tomorrow? Living the Fabulous Life Through Forgiveness. And we're going to talk a little bit about that next week on the show. So be blessed, and I look forward to being with you then. And so it is.